Welcome to the Better Picture. To all of our regular listeners, welcome back. To all of our new listeners, this is Ross Foote. I'm the host of the Better Picture radio talk show on photography. The format of the show is going to be, I have a guest, we'll talk about conversation about photography, and you can call in at any time with a question in any way related to photography, printing, taking the pictures, storing them, whatever you want. 800-552-8502 is the number to call in your question. And tonight we are fortunate to have a very dear friend of mine, as well as one of Shreveport's most distinguished citizens, Judge Carl Stewart, Chief Judge of the U.S. Court of Appeal, Fifth Circuit, President of the National Inns of Court, former state judge, all-round Renaissance man. But you know, it's only an hour show, and if we go into non-photographic achievements, we'll run out of time before getting any camera exposure. So let's jump right in. Judge, welcome to the Better Picture.
Thanks, Ross. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Well, I have known Judge Stewart for several years. I've always known him to have a camera with him, and I never really had a chance to sit down and visit with you as to how you got started and how you got interested in photography. When did you start? What age?
Well, when I was in high school, I had a Kodak film camera. I guess it would be equivalent now to a point-and-shoot, but Kodak was sort of the brand name in cameras, and I had one of my own, and I tended to carry it around. Back then, you know, it was film camera, either 12 or 24. And so in high school, I took, you know, photos, but I also had a Polaroid camera. Sound like a dinosaur mentioning that, but the Polaroid was the instant camera. And so the color wasn't the best, but the instant gratification of being able to see the picture right away. Who knew now what we'd be able to do? But I had a Polaroid, but generally the Kodak, you know, was what I always had.
Did you have any formal training in photography?
No, I really didn't. It just was something that was of interest. I've always been a reader. I've had a Time magazine subscription since I was fifth grade, and I still have it. And I always like looking at the pictures. Back then, we had Look magazine and Life magazine. And so many of the magazines had photos. And so looking at those, you saw photos of the world and just great shots to admire.
And when you looked at that, and we've encouraged people in the past to go pick up the favorite magazine and look at it and see. Do you have any specific styles or things that you can trace back to an influence on you now from those pictures?
Well, I think so. When we were growing up, my brothers and I, my parents, you know, we took vacations, you know, nothing, you know, fantastic, but we drove in the car, and my dad and mom, you know, took us to parks and things like that, scenic. They always had to be a teaching point in a trip. So, you know, you went to a monument and, you know, you learn things. And so I've been always sort of bookish. So taking the photo was a good way to kind of preserve, you know, what you saw. So if you went back to school, you know, you always had to do book reports and, you know, tell about your summer vacation. And that was kind of standard stuff back in elementary. Well, if you had photos, it made it a lot easier trying to tell what you did over the summer, or you had pictures to really show it rather than standing in front of the class trying to make something interesting that otherwise is boring.
And when you're back shooting with the film, of course, you don't know what you have till you get it back processed. Did you ever do any of your own processing or?
No, I never did, and that was kind of the guesswork. But one of the things I always did was I never wanted to run out of film. And so, you know, if I had a 24, you know, or 36 is what I bought. And so I believed then in just taking lots of shots because you didn't know what it was going to look like.
Right.
And you worried somebody's eyes might be closed or whatever. So that's kind of what I did.
Once again, the number is 800-552-8502. If you have a question, you're happy to call it in. Judge, you've got children.
Right.
As they were growing up, were you one of those dads that always had the camera and documented the football and all that stuff?
I did. And like many kids, they hated it. They were embarrassed by, you know, dad's got the camera again. But like many parents, you do it anyway. So whether that was Easter speeches at church, or my youngest son did soccer, my oldest son baseball, daughter soccer. So I always had a camera, you know, to photograph those moments in school, you know, with speeches and things. So I was one of those conspicuous dads with the camera.
And your children are old enough now where that was still in the film days.
Right.
So that means you have boxes and boxes of photographs?
I do. I guess I'm what's called a type A personality. And so I have photo boxes and albums galore. When my first child was born, I was in the Army, and so I had a camera then. So I've got pictures of, you know, like first bringing him home, and, you know, now he's 40 years old, but I still have those photos and albums. And when I ran out of space for some albums, I started buying photo boxes. So I grouped the photos in the box by year with a label. So I have boxes in my house now where those old photos are located and I can find them. And I've had to pull them out for each of my kids' weddings, you know, going back to get these. And, you know, I can get them. I know where they are.
Well, that's probably puts you in a very elite group of people with shoeboxes and boxes of photographs we had. One of my mentors in the photography world was Lynn Hawk with Newcomb Camera down in Alexandria. And when I had the second child, she made me promise that I would take as many pictures of the second as I did rolls of the first.
Uh-huh.
That's because that first parent, you know, you're in there with those cameras like we were shooting with that.
Exactly.
Have you taken any of those images and had them digitally scanned? Have you moved them forward in the world?
I've done some of those back, you know, early. You may recall D's Photo Supply located down on Milam and Shreveport, and D's was just, you know, sort of the perfect place, was locally owned. And for an amateur, and I use that word with a capital A, that I'm an amateur, but you could go to D's and, you know, take your photos and look like they could do magic, you know, with it. They could digitize it. And then one of Judge Tom Stagg's badminton buddies, Fletcher Thorne Thompson, is really an icon in photography, and they had Beyond Par. And so those were kind of the experts that if you had something like me, an amateur, said, I would like to do X, then, you know, they could either tell you how to do it or get it done. So some of the older, not a lot of them, but I did have digitized.
And when you go in to back in the day before your digital work, when you would go in to D's or to one of the places with an image, did you participate in the enlargement? I'm assuming you enlarged pictures of the kids and all
right.
That stuff. Would you just say, this is what I want done to it? How involved were you in the post-production stuff back in the film day?
Well, back with them, I mean, I would kind of have a sense of what I wanted, and they were good about saying, well, if you crop this out, if you move this out, you know, you'll have better that. And you're kind of like, but that's my photo. I don't want it. You know, you're reluctantly letting somebody tell you about cutting this, cutting that. But they were handy because I wasn't a pro to say, if you get rid of some of this ceiling, you know, if we bring this in, you get a better shot. So that was helpful over time because some of those things I didn't know then. Now at my age, I do it instinctively
right.
And by eye. So I do a lot of cropping, you know, in the viewfinder and beforehand. And so if I'm shooting, I don't shoot a lot of ceiling or floor. I'm able to compose my photo before I shoot it. But because those persons helped me see the value of, you know, zooming this up, cropping out, moving this to the side, I think over time I've learned to kind of do it instinctively.
Right. And I think most active shooters probably are informally trained all the time. Somebody goes, that's really nice, but does that tree help?
Right.
That type stuff with it. That is good to have a mentor type relationship, even if they are trying to sell you bigger prints out of smaller pieces of your picture.
Exactly.
Yeah. But obviously they trained you well with that. Now you've shifted to digital now. When did that happen? How did that happen?
Well, I was drugged into digital like I've been drugged into computers. I was a film guy, and when the digital part, I said, that will never last. That's a fad. It won't work. You know, the quality won't be the same. And so actually, we took an Alaskan cruise inside Passage back in 05, and I actually had my Canon Rebel film camera over my neck, and I had my brand new Canon digital over my neck. And so taking pictures of Sawyer Glacier, Mendenhall, I shot first with the film and then with the digital. And so there are many shots I shot with both cameras because when I got back, I wanted to compare the image, because if the digital wasn't better, I was going to do film.
And the digital was better?
Well, the digital was better, but more importantly, the instant gratification kicked in considerably. One of the disadvantages of film is, as I said, it was either 24 or 36. And so the downside is, say if you had a roll of 36 and you're on number 32 and you're about to get into a sequence where you know you're going to take 10 or more photos, well, you've either got to quickly use the roll up and put a new roll in, or you're going to run out of image just at the wrong time. And so digital had advantage. If you've got a huge memory card, you can just shoot and shoot and shoot.
We have a call? We do. All right, we have a call coming in.
We do. This is Ray from Washington, D.C.
Okay, Ray, you're on the air.
Thank you, Ross. Judge, I've got a question for you. I've known a few judges in my life, and it seems like one of their distinguishing characteristics is being able to see things from lots of perspectives and seeing all sides of an issue or a situation. My question is, do you think that has ever influenced your photography?
Well, I do. I think one of the things it does is because I virtually never shoot one photo. I will shoot multiple photos, several angles of it. I might shoot it with the lens wide, zoom it in. If I can elevate, I may shoot down on it. And so having the multiple perspectives often helps, I think, you know, make a determination. So I would say it's probably fair to say that, you know, being a judge and trying to look at things impartially from different angles is helpful.
Great. Well, thank you.
Great question, Ray. Thank you. Judge, when you shifted to the digital and you compared those, how many film shots did you continue to shoot? How long did you carry two cameras?
Well, it was a little embarrassing, and my wife said it was very embarrassing for her for people to comment that I had two cameras hanging around my neck. And so she was probably the bigger determinant for me to take one of the cameras off my shoulder to do it. But the other advantage to digital, I could look in the viewfinder and see what I had.
Right.
And so being able to either delete the shot or take another shot before the moment disappears was a huge advantage over film, because you wouldn't know what you had. And maybe a professional like yourself could pretty much know because of the careful attention. But for an amateur, you're not sure, you know, exactly the spot you're never coming back to you have. So digital allowed you to shoot quickly, you know, edit it out. I think that's what really won me over, being able to compose and delete, see if I need to take a shot in the camera lens right there before I've left.
Right, because you're right, with film, you don't know if you've blown out a highlight or if you've got a shadow across somebody's face that you may have missed with that. So that does help. I know I finally got a digital camera, and I was resistant. I was a film guy. And I've taken two rolls of film since I got my digital, and that was back in the 90s. So it just, I switched and very quickly went.
I still own my film camera.
Oh, I still have mine.
Yeah, I still have mine. I don't know if you can still find film, but I never got rid of it.
Right. Did you have a particular film that you liked?
Well, I was buying Kodak Color, I think it was Ektachrome at the time. Later, you know, when Fuji got into the market, and so, you know, I got the sense that, you know, sort of brand loyal to Kodak Color. And so I used that. But then later, you know, with the Fujifilm, when I'd get my photos back from the processor, I noticed that the paper on the back said Fujifilm. So, you know, I was like, well, if the processing plant is using the Fujifilm paper, I guess I can use the Fujifilm.
Yeah, match it to it.
Right. So that was what, you know, then it just became, you know, kind of a price comparison between the two. But originally, like I said, I had a Kodak box camera, what I grew up on. So, you know, it's kind of like you get brand loyal, Kodak, lots of marketing, you know, things made in the USA, et cetera. And so as, you know, the market changed, you know, we became very competitive.
One of the issues that that we had in that is now with the printers, they have printers, the Epson printers, the Canon printers, they have inks really designed for their papers.
Oh, right.
And do you do any of your own printing?
I have a printer at home that I print. I will just say the pace of my life is too fast for me to do much of anything, you know, like printing
right.
at home. And I have a printer and I've been toying with buying another one. I said, now, when in the world am I going to sit down to do this? When I would go to visit with Judge Stagg, and he had all that equipment in his office, you know, I'd kind of say, I need one of these, need one of those. So maybe some point when I slow down some, I really would like to do that.
Well, you've been friends with Judge Stagg for many, many years.
Right.
And for those that don't know, Judge Stagg was a big-time photographer as well and was kind of known for his photography. And if you didn't know it, he would tell you. So he was there. Any good Tom Stagg stories that...
Well, back, I never would have dreamed that, in effect, I would have not been his boss, but graded his paper as a court of appeal judge, and he was a trial judge. But when I was a lawyer as an assistant U.S. attorney, you know, we tried cases in front of him, and we learned that you didn't schedule any cases in the month of October in front of him, and I didn't understand why that was. And so his minute clerk explained that October was the month that Judge Stagg X'd out every year because he took a month-long vacation to travel and take photos. He was a big wildflower fan, but he took other things. And so I learned from him the intentionality of photography and the enjoyment and the therapeutic value of shooting, particularly when you have a high-stress job like he had and like, you know, I have. And I guess I never paid attention to flowers as much as I do now, had it not been for seeing all the wildflowers that he had up in his chamber. So the detail and attention that he took to taking the flowers, how distinctive they were. And now I tend to take a lot of flowers.
Well, I've been in your chambers and seen some of the stuff that you've decorated with your own, and I could definitely see an influence from Judge Stagg and an inspiration to go that way, the close-up, the recognition of the blossom itself. So I do understand that. One of the problems that many of the digital shooters have is we have, you can take so many. Like you had said, you don't run out of film.
Right.
So whereas you may have used to come back from a trip with 5 rolls of 36, now you're coming back with 1,000 pictures on a card. What's your workflow? How do you know where those are? Because at some point you've got to have 50,000 photographs.
Well, I do. I have an enormous amount of albums, and these used to have a jingle that says it's not a photograph until you print it. And so I'm still a staunch believer in printing a photograph. Nowadays, people want you to email it. They just want the image. So I always print the photos that I take because I want to see it in hard, see what it looks like, and so forth. And a lot of people are resistant. I'll say, well, I'll mail you the photo. Oh, no, just email it to me. Well, I tend to print it anyway. So I put them in the albums. I buy albums by the box loads, and I know that at some point I will have a use for them, so I'll post them in the album. But I also use the storage boxes as well, and so I will store them by date, label them, etc. But the other thing is that I never run out of memory cards. And so what I do is on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, where people are going out to buy TVs and stereos, I buy memory cards. And so most of the stores have big discounts on memory cards. So I can buy a $70 memory card for $9. So I will buy a year's supply of memory cards on Black Friday. So I never reuse memory cards. And so if I take shots in Hawaii or London or wherever, I will back them up on a disc or a flash drive, but I still have the original memory card. So if I'm shooting an orchid or something I shot in Hawaii, I can go find my original card. And if I'm needing to enlarge it to a 16 by 20 or something else, I have my original resolution. So rather than taking pictures over the card, erasing and formatting, I have all my memory cards.
Well, you really are a throwback to the digital, to the analog days. That's just your negative file. But one of the advantages is, and we had talked about this in the past, I don't. I tend to download mine, back them up off-site, do some of the others. But you're right, you have the full resolution. And if you've made some tweaks and adjustments to it, then you can always go back and start over.
Right.
You've got those. At this point, we're going to take a break for our new listeners. One of the program notes that we have is we do a smartphone minute, and this is a chance to talk to all of you who carry your phone around and say, well, I don't have a camera, but I do have my phone. Well, the iPhone and the Galaxies and the new smartphones have developed some amazing cameras with terrific potential. In fact, if you go to Google and put in a request for smartphone photos or photo galleries from phones and look at some of the things that are possible, you will be inspired and awed by what people are doing with phones. While we're sitting here, Kermit always documents the guests that we have here. Kermit has an icon, but he holds his phone up and takes the pictures with us as we're here. So it's they are a great thing to have. The tip today is not really going to be our standard get closer, stay focused, careful composition. I'm going to suggest that you try taking one of the photos that you like and hitting the edit button on your phone just to see what happens. Now, there's a lot of post-production in those pictures that you see. There's a lot of specialized work that you can Photoshop and do that. But technology has put most of Photoshop that you're going to use into your phone. And you can click on that and you can change the color balance. You can change the contrast. You can get highlights that are too bright and tone them down. These are things you can do basically by sliding your finger across the screen. And the beauty of it is it doesn't ruin the picture. So if you mess it all up playing with it, hit reset and try it again. You don't really need to go get instructions. I mean, there are 100 different things on the internet that'll tell you how to use your phone. But my recommendation and the tip is take a picture you like, hit an edit, and just spend some time playing with it. And if it gets out of whack, put reset, start all over again. Every photographer I know tweaks their image somehow. They either go down to D's and they say, let's crop this here. Everyone has a way of tweaking. And the cameras are so good and the technology is so good that the tip today for smartphones is dig into that edit menu and watch your good photos turn great. And Judge, speaking of that, do you do any tweaking on the computer?
Occasionally I do. Sometimes I'll do it, but sort of less on the computer. If I go to a commercial place and use a kiosk, then, you know, if I put my card in, you know, I will do some zooming, cropping out. Sometimes you look at an image and, you know, there's a bush in it or something else. And so I become more attuned. That maybe at the time I shot it, I mean, I didn't have as much time to compose, so I shot it anyway, knowing that at some point, you know, I would edit, you know, that out. So I do try to do that, particularly if it's a photo I'm going to give away, and I give a lot of pictures away, I will tweak it first to kind of get those kind of things out and then send it.
And so when you go to a kiosk, that's just at a local store?
Right.
You just go plug it
in? Sam's or Walmart or CVS or places pop the memory card in. And I can see my image, and usually you've got zoom or color or brightness and things like that. So I can, and that's one advantage of like of having my card, is the memory card, is that I can zoom it up, you know, and get rid of some of the excess, or maybe if there's another person in the photo or something like that, I can edit it in the kiosk like that and then print it or have it printed, you know, where it's kind of a good clean one.
Well, that really does take you back and takes it up in my estimation, because that means each of the photographs that you've printed then is a unique image.
Right.
You're not changing what's on your card. You're changing it there. When you pull your card out, it's then gone.
Right.
Whereas I put mine into my computer, I'll adjust it. I can reprint that time and time again.
Right.
You're hanging on to that old style of work, aren't you?
Well, one of these days when I have a little more free time and I can diddle with the computer, then, you know, I probably will gravitate. Sometimes mine is sort of situational because when I'm at my computer, I'm tending to have it at work.
Right.
So, you know, I have to kind of pick my spots at, you know, when I can, you know, do this away. And there's some downsides to it, but I just try to make it work. Again, with the capital A amateur.
Right. If you have a question for the judge, or if you have a question about photography in general. You can call it in at 800-552-8502, and we're ready to try to answer the questions that you have. Judge Stewart, you talked about giving away a lot of pictures, and I know you have emailed me some that you've seen that I like the humor in it when you're on the dais at a graduation and you're snapping pictures and sending them to me. I always kind of enjoyed that. But it's obviously a very big part of the social fabric and what you do and how you use pictures. Do you set out after people to take the pictures? I mean, you say, oh, so-and-so's coming, I got to make sure I got a picture of her to send back to her mama or something like that?
Well, I really do. I like interacting with people. I'm in a lot of settings, professionally and otherwise, with my work. I find a number of people who are resistant to photographs. They don't like having their photograph taken. They don't want having it taken. But nonetheless, I'll sort of ease it, and we get the photo taken. Well, I've never had anybody send a photo back to me after I send it.
Right.
And so I, you know, try some unique ways. If I had a gathering, I was in Northern California last week on a trip, and I took photos with different people, sometimes maybe law students or others, you know, want to take a photo. And so I will print it. I have a lot of note cards that I buy, some from different people, Jacob Lawrence. I don't send it out, you know, on a court piece. You know, I'll buy a note card. I read a lot of magazines like Photographer's Edge, and, you know, you see the little folders that you can buy and stick the photo in and write a note. So I have some different kind of themes that says a picture's worth 1,000 words or whatever. And so I'll print the photo, put it in the note card, write a note to the person, thank you for coming and supporting X, put it in the mail and mail it to them. And so it's people tend to appreciate the personal gesture and the handwritten note with the photo that they've taken with. And many people will say, well, I've put this on my desk or hung it on the wall.
We have another call coming in?
We do. This is Betty from Center, Texas. Betty, go ahead with your question.
My question is, when you purchase memory discs, do you buy a variety of sizes, or do you have a minimum size that you always buy?
I do buy a variety because a lot of people I notice now use their cameras to video record as well.
Yes.
And many of the newer ones, people don't use the old camcorder, they record. So many of the memory cards are made huge, 64, 32s, so that you can record with them. Well, normally I don't need a card with 64 or 32, so I will tend to buy some smaller ones. I'll buy some 12s. You know, and I buy medium size, but I'll always have a few that have the huge capacity, you know, just in case. But yeah, generally, I will definitely buy some smaller ones because if I'm taking pictures of my grandchildren and,
right,
you know, parties at the house and things like that, you know, I'm not going to have 2,000 photos on the card. So I will tend to, you know, use a smaller card for, like, Christmas, for example. When the Christmas holidays come, I put a new card in. So
right,
whatever the Christmas events at home, if we go to a dance, go to the Natchitoches Festival, so that card is probably going to cover the whole of the Christmas holidays, you know, including office things and so forth. So when New Year's comes, I probably have, you know, I haven't filled the card, but it's all Christmas. So when I take the photos, print them, or whatever I'm doing, that card is, you know, labeled Christmas 2015. So if I'm thinking back about an event during the holiday or whatever, I know exactly where to find the photo because it's grouped, as opposed to I got 20 different things on this card. Where in the world is it?
Well, one of the advantages of that also, and Betty, I think it makes a good point on the size of the cards, is the physical size is so small, you can store a million photographs and put them in your pocket.
Right.
I mean, when you do that, if you haven't done like that. Well, Betty, great question. We appreciate that. Excuse me. Just one little note. We got another call?
We do indeed.
Oh.
We have a call. This is from Central Louisiana. This is Rick. Go ahead, Rick, with your question.
Hey, hi, guys. I joined your program in mid-broadcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know that you're talking about digital cameras as well as the older real lens cameras. You're right about the 20 new smartphones, do you notice a difference between that and, say, a nice Canon 55-105 white lens, the pro one, on a good piece of good camera? What do you trade off with digital? What do you gain with the glass? What do you lose with the glass to the digital?
You want to stab? You want me to take it?
Well, I'll give you the amateur version. I will concede that the cameras in the phones are much better than they started out. They are great, but they are not a substitute for a good camera, a great camera. I printed off the smartphone, and I use mine occasionally, but to me, the resolution, the clarity of, like, facial features, the kinds of things you get in a legitimate SLR, it is just not the same. You know, on the smartphone, for most people, it doesn't make a difference because they just want a snapshot. But if you're taking, you know, something really picturesque at whatever, I think the glass is, you know, is worth it, you know, for the image.
Rick, I'm going to join in my favorite amateur and say that's exactly right. The glass is what makes the difference. And you just cannot get as clear a resolution at any distance with the phone. One of the other advantages is that in a SLR where you've got real lenses. Now, bear in mind, you can get some plastic SLR lenses that aren't as good as the phone. Right. So, you know, you have to proceed on the basis that you're buying good glass. But the advantage to that is when you zoom out to that 105, you're putting all that information in the camera, whether it's on film or whether it's on a sensor. And remember, the sensor is also 20 times bigger than what you have in the phone. So you can collect more data and more information. It's just it's a Ferrari versus a Volkswagen, and if you just go into the store to get milk, the Volkswagen does right. Judge, you correct a snapshot, it'll do it. But I think the trade-off is that you're not carrying around 2 pounds of camera equipment. Annie Leibovitz said, in her mind, the best camera, when you factor it all in, the best camera on the planet today is the iPhone because you have it with you. And that's sure. better. You know, you can have the best camera in the world at home, but that's not going to get that sunset unless you happen to be at home. So it's a great question, and I think Judge Stewart nailed the answer. Yeah. If you're snapshotting, you can do that with the phone and record the event. With some post-production, you can get some artwork, but I'm a firm believer in good glass.
Yeah.
Appreciate the call. Judge, one thing before we go, well, I'll just say we got a run of calls on. Remember the number is 800-552-8502. We are here to answer the questions. Based on the story that you told right before those questions about you take your card in, you do your adjustments, you print it one time, and then you mail it to people, anybody that's out there in our listening audience that has gotten one of Judge Stewart's pieces of work, understand now that you have an original artwork that will not be reproduced. If you go back to a different machine, it's going to print it slightly different. Right. So those of you who have gotten that pictures, you got something special. Now, Judge, you would also have been very active in the Boy Scouts.
Right.
And you've been camping and carry your camera gear when you go camping?
I carry a camera wherever I go.
Right. Now, carry all your equipment, or do you go down to your point and push? Or?
Well, the pace of my life and most of my travel now is business trips. So, as you know, carrying the bag with all the lenses, et cetera, is just prohibitive. Traveling on the airplane, often the TSA people don't know what you have, and they want to take the lenses out and super examine them and, you know, all that. And so it really puts a pinch on, you know, carrying all of your good, you know, unless you know that you're going to have, you know, great photo shoots. So I tend to find now rarer that I have, you know, my full camera work. So I have some medium-sized cameras, some pocket-sized, but I always have a camera in my briefcase wherever I'm traveling because I know somewhere there's going to be a good photo moment that comes up.
I always put my shoes on the conveyor belt first because I know when it hits the camera bag, it stops everything. To, like you say, they glance around. Now, you did have one experience at a jamboree that led to a multi-year relationship. Tell us tell us about that. I think that's just fascinating to show you the connection that a picture can do.
Right. In 2005, I attended the Boy Scout National Jamboree at Fort A.P. Hill, Virginia. And as many know, you know, there's like 5,000-6,000 Boy Scouts from all over the country that gathered there at Fort A.P. Hill for a week's long of camping, et cetera. But one of the traditions going back to Roosevelt, maybe before, on the Sunday ending the Jamboree is called the Arena Show. And the President of the United States flies in on Marine One on a Sunday afternoon to address the scouts. And so it's a big ticket item. It's something to look forward to. The presidents have done it. And so in 2005, President George W. Bush was scheduled to come in. We're out on a hill. It's like in a pasture. I mean, it's 120 degrees out there. It's hot. You're sweating and you're just sitting on the ground. But to see the president come in, I mean, it's a real moment. And that's one of those times I did have all my equipment with me. So President Bush blew in. He addressed the scouts, you know, on stage. And there's maybe 50 Eagle Scouts that are up on the stage with him. Well, I didn't know any of the kids. And so I had a VIP seat, which means I was 50 yards from the stage. And so I had my zoom lens, my telephone, I had all. And so anyway, I'm just shooting because, you know, you shoot when you're, right. You just take pictures. And so how many times?
If you're around the president, you shoot pictures.
Exactly. So how many times is the president of the United States? So I took photos galore, you know, of him speaking, et cetera. And I could look in the camera and they look pretty good. So at the end of the program, there's a couple that ran up to me and said, Mr., did you get a picture of our son? I'm like, ma'am, I don't know who your son is. And so out in the bright sunlight, as you know, you can't see in your viewfinder that good what you have. So I said, I'm not sure, but I took a lot of photos. And if I had, they had one of those throwaway cameras, you know, the kind you throw away. Like I said, we're 50 yards away. So I'm pretty sure whatever they took, it's not going to be a good photo. So I said, whatever I have, you know, if it came out good, I'd be welcome. Do you have your address? So they had been fanning with the magazine. And, you know, in the magazine, they have the name cover on it. So they ripped off the cover of the magazine with their name. They were from upstate New York. And they gave it to me. And I said, well, I'll look. And if I have something, I'll give it. Long story short, when I get back home, looked at it. And that was and so I looked in the camera and I had this great shot of the President of the United States with his arm around the scout, and the scout he has an arm around is their son. His name is Benjamin Pomerantz. And so when I got back, I had this great shot. So I took it and I printed 4x6s, 5x7s, 8x10s. So I sent them a whole photo packet, you know, of the photos of Benjamin. He's president with his arm around him. And so I sent it to them. And so the people were very gracious and appreciative, sent me thank you notes. Well, from 2005 until now, I have been their annual pen pal. And so every Christmas, I get letters, cards, notes, updates on Benjamin through high school. He went to college, he went to law school, et cetera. And so this year, I got a note from the parents saying, Dear Judge Stewart, Benjamin is the Deputy Director of Veteran Affairs for the state of New York. He's going to be in New Orleans for a conference. Is there a way we can come to meet you? Because I never met Benjamin. See, I met the parents because the scouts went on off. And I said, well, I won't be in New Orleans during the time you're there. And they said, oh, we'll drive to Shreveport. So
Do they know how far it was to Shreveport?
Well, they did after I told them. But they took a motor trip from New Orleans up through Natchez, and so we arranged it, and they came over 3 weeks ago, and I hosted them for lunch at the Petroleum Club and got to meet Benjamin for the first time, you know, with it, had the photo and so forth. And so we took photos and like that. So it was, you know, all because of a photo. But the young man went from being, you know, in high school to college to law school, and now he's head of an agency that supports Veterans Affairs. So it made me feel really, really good about sharing the photograph. But it also, you know, restores your confidence just how grateful the parents were and how supportive their son was.
I've long said that people would rather have an out-of-focus picture of their child than a perfect picture of a stranger. And the fact that you were able to get the in-focus perfect picture of their child would make a friend, and I'm glad that y'all finally got together. The number to call is 800-552-8502. Visiting with Judge Carl Stewart, great jurist and a great photographer. Now, in addition to people and events, I mean, your range is enormous. It baffles me. I mean, you've shot presidents, flowers, landscapes. Do you have a particular favorite subject?
Well, as I mentioned to Tom Stagg, I'm always partial to flowers, and I really look at flowers. He, you know, talked to me about the beautiful azaleas at Norton Art Gallery, which was near his home. So I made a point of, you know, going out there, and that was local beauty. So I shot azaleas, and I've got pictures of azaleas with a bumblebee in it. Like sunsets, you know, as you well know, the sunsets you got to be intentional about.
Right.
And sunrise, because you got to time it right, you know, get it. And so I like taking the sun in different in shades. I'm not big with taking animals, although I do have a couple of shots of a koala bear in Australia that I really love because he posed for me. But, you know, other kind of scenic shots, landscapes, you know, monuments, things like that are beautiful. There are a lot of beautiful buildings. So those tend to be kind of my favorites, you know, now of taking them, because I take them with an eye that the probability I'm going to enlarge it and or frame it. And so I'm really have the idea that what I'm shooting is for the purpose of an enlargement to be framed, doing a 16x20 poster or a canvas wrap. So if I'm visiting an area and there's a great park or something like that, that's kind of my idea.
At the Ansel Adams approach, you should visualize the print before you release the shutter.
Right.
I understand we have another call coming in.
We do. This is Jody from Shreveport. Jody, go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hey, Jody.
Hey, I'm an aspiring professional, nowhere near where you're at right now. And I was looking to switch over. I have a 24-70, 7200, a 45. And I was thinking about going to straight primes. I mean, just when you look through the, like I said, for prints, when you look through the images, just my 45 is the sharpest lens I have. And I'm just thinking about getting rid of the zooms and going to straight 85, 50. But as a wedding photographer, I know you've shot a lot of events and stuff, so you probably have a good zoom. Like, am I going to run into some problems here?
The problem that you run into with the digital, changing lenses a lot, is you get dust on the sensor. And you have to be very careful if you're in a setting where you're going to change it. With film, it was okay. If you change the lens, you got a piece of dust. You have one piece of dust on a piece of film, and it went with the film when you advanced it. But on the digital, it's there forever. The real problem comes into what you're willing to pay for it. You know, you pay $1,800 for a 24-70 zoom, and that's going to take a better picture than a $300 prime. It's just the better glass. So there's a place that's called Deep Preview, DPREVIEW .com, that does in-depth analysis of the different lenses. I know exactly what you're talking about. The primes are neater, they're lighter, but it's an issue that you have to look at the quality, take the pictures and see what you like. But the dust really is an issue if you're out. And if you're trying to shoot weddings, I don't know a wedding photographer that relies on a series of primes. Some have an extra camera with a prime lens they really like, but the 24-70 and the 7200, especially if it's that 2.8 version, then you're probably better to stay with that. But great question, though, because it is how you shoot. This is as personal as buying shoes. This is where we go. Is another call? Okay. Well, appreciate the call in on that. Judge, we were talking about shooting the flowers, and do you have any tips? I mean, I normally in the course have a tip section, but I've got somebody of your photographic stature here. I'll give the tips to you. What suggestions would you give to the person trying to take the flower or the sunset or whatever one of your favorites is?
Well, first of all, is just don't be afraid to take many shots. I'm an amateur. A pro might be able to look at it and know they nailed it, but as an amateur, I don't have that kind of confidence in myself. As you know, some photos are better taken if you're using a tripod because of the natural shake of the body. And a lot of times with sort of my MO, I really can't take the tripod, you know, with me, etc. So I'm aligned for the fact that, you know, I may have some shake or something that you as a pro would allow for, have your equipment. So I would say some people just want to take one shot, you know, two shots, whatever. So one of the things I've learned is just to take multiple shots. I have a macro lens that I bought, and so in trying to take flowers, for example, you know, I figured out I have to get low where the flowers are, kneel down, you know, get different angles. The sun and lighting make such a big difference, you know, on things like that. So I'm trying to learn to take multiple angles, position my body as opposed to relying on the lens to zoom in and out, using my feet as the best zoomer. In other words, to move my body rather than relying on the lens to bring something in or closer, just little things like that. And the other thing is just in taking shots, for example, with people, a lot of people like to have the person centered, you know, on whatever the object. I took some pictures last week. And so I like putting the subject in the corner of the photo. So say if it's a picture of the state capitol or something, rather than having the capitol coming out the top of the person's head, then I would put the person in the corner or maybe over the shoulder. And I found in taking kids' photos or other kind of photos, it really makes for a neater shot to have the subject off-centered rather than the typical put them in the middle sort of thing with doing it. So, but the main tip is visualizing the photo before shooting it. I try to do a lot of composition mentally on what the shot is I want to get before I actually start aiming. So I have some sense of what I want to try to gain by taking, and then take several of those and be able to choose. Somebody looking might not know I took 15 shots of this before they saw the one that they saw, but that's kind of, I encourage, and that's the advantage of digital with a huge card. You don't lose anything by taking a lot of shots.
Right. You know, Richard Avedon, who's probably one of the better fashion photographers, glamour photographers, they said for a Cosmopolitan cover, he would shoot 1,200 shots.
Goodness.
Now, that was film on Kodachrome, but he was in a different pay bracket than you and I are, so he right. He could do that. But I think the advice is borne out by the professionals. No, it's the little nuances that you have to do. Now, you travel extensively. Like, I know, I mean, I have an idea how hard you work because I've seen your car in the parking lot many a night late.
Right.
And I also know when I try to find you, you're usually out of town.
Right.
When you travel, and like you say, you always have a camera, do you seek out specific things? Do you research out, say, oh, I'm going to be in an area of Yosemite, I need to take this camera?
Well, I do. I was in Northern California last week and to Sacramento, and I'd never been to Sacramento. Well, before I left Shreveport, you know, I Googled Sacramento to see what are the photo sites in that area. Well, the state capitol in Sacramento has a wonderful circle of yellow roses that's in a bed that's distant from the capitol, but it's a great shot that you get the capitol, but you get the yellow roses. Well, I saw that on the website. And so when I'm traveling, even if I'm speaking or whatever, usually people will ask me, well, is there anything you want to do while you're here? I'm like, yes, I want to take a great photo shot. So I usually beforehand have an idea if time is at a premium, where the prime photo shot spot is. And if ahead of time, knowing I'll take one or two cameras, I may take the smaller one, but I may take a larger one if I think it's something I'm going to get a chance, you know, to take. And I went to Wilmington, Delaware in March, and I only had about 2 hours in between two events. Well, I paid the taxi driver to take me out to Winterthur, which is in Wilmington, the DuPont Estate. And so then I paid him extra to wait because I only had a little time. So I took the tour, ran through the park, you know, took my shots that I wanted, et cetera. And then the guy brought me back. So I didn't have much of a window, but I have some shots that I have blown up to 16 by 20. I have some that are in wraps that were great shots because it was a beautiful sunshiny day. But before I went to Wilmington, I knew about Winterthur and I had it in my mind, you know, to try to get some photos.
And you were taking your bigger camera bag at that point?
Right. Well, I actually had one of my medium ones. I didn't have the big one, but I had, you know, my medium one that has a pretty good zoom lens and image stabilizer with it. And I've kind of gotten accustomed to using it when I can't take the bag. So I kind of know my limitations in what I'm going to get.
If any of you listening have been to the webpage, thebetterpicture.org, you will have seen not only the pictures that Judge Stewart put up, but I'm proud to say the home page picture of me on that Judge Stewart took at my son's wedding in London. Made a special trip. You did bring the bag on that one.
I brought the big equipment.
He brought the equipment on that one, and it was nice. I mean, obviously, it's not a stage shot, but it's a confined area. You obviously keep your eye out as well, because on that trip, you also got a picture of my two sons just lurking, the one getting married who was a little bit nervous, and you captured that. When you're walking, even going to an event like that, are you always looking? Is your eye always moving?
Well, it is, and I read a lot. And one of the major things with photography, I like to use photos to tell a story. And so in like shooting the wedding where someone, I saw your sons, that was a story. Right. And so we've got two brothers just before, and it was a tranquil moment. And so instinctively, I knew that was a great shot. But I also know that even though you've got professional photographers around, that is not a shot likely that a professional is even anywhere around to have.
Right.
But I felt like if I were a parent, I'd love to have that shot. So, you know, I'm always looking for the good shot, the shot that tells the story, something that's a little different. And so whether it's children or something else, I'm always sort of, you know, looking for that memorable shot, because photos tell such great memories.
Well, we're running short on time, but that does bring up a question that most of us that are slaves to our camera, I think Neil Johnson said it best, you know, when the muse strikes, you just have to answer it. You know, you got to go keep that eye open. Did your wife and family just throw up their hands and say, there he goes again?
Well, they do, but they're kind of used to it. When my middle child, my daughter, got married a few years ago, they were worried that as I walked careening down the aisle, I was going to pull out the camera and start taking photos and embarrass everybody, including the bride. And so I suppressed the instincts to do that and didn't have the camera on me, but I did have my camera bag under my seat in the church. So as soon as I handed off Korea to Frederick, I immediately reached under the seat and got my camera.
So they, you know, people that have cameras understand that. People that are married to cameras understand that. People that are married to people with cameras, they may not understand that. But that is one of the things that.
But one of the things I would say, and I definitely want to say, I'm very, very respectful of professionals, and I never try to get a shot just to get the shot. So if I see a professional like you, or wedding taking shots, I don't attempt to take the shot unless they give me permission to take it, or if they let me take it first, or if they say no photos, I don't take them. So I don't try to violate the space. And I've been to places where I really would love to have had a photo. But if there's no photos, I don't take the photos. If I go to museums, I ask first. And if they say you can take it, but no flash. And I'm a rules person by definition.
Right.
And
say,
so I like to respect, though, the professionals like you and others. If you're there taking it, I'm not going to have my flash going off while you're trying to take it. So I, as much as I love taking, I can resist the temptation. If there are rules or boundaries that I ought to respect, I'll just do without the photo.
It's always refreshing to hear a chief judge of an appellate court say that they believe in following rules. That is always a very nice thing that we have, that we can do that. Speaking of your offices, I have been to the offices, and you have some amazing shots that are up there. But you've also had a show here locally, didn't you?
Right.
And what's it like to walk in and have the public just ready to critique? I mean, it's all out there when you put it up and say, come be nice or not.
Well, it's fun. It's redeeming, because you do it, you know, for personal pleasure. And I take a lot of photos. I just say it's therapeutic, because, you know, I have a high stress job, and I find taking the photos to be relaxing and therapeutic. And so when other people see your work and, you know, value them, it does, you know, a lot for you to do it. And, you know, you appreciate the tension and, you know, running through the park to get the photo.
Right.
When somebody renew, you say, well, it really was worth being out of breath to get this photo, because, you know, people appreciate, you know, what you've taken. Somebody might say, well, that looks like it's out of magazine or whatever. So it reinforces, you know, what you're trying to do.
And we have to acknowledge there are elements of luck that come into it. I mean,
right.
Preparation on the webpage, the first picture we have is the picture of a presidential motorcade.
Right.
Beautifully framed picture. that obviously was just driving by. You weren't running along the side.
Right.
And if you look closely, the president's looking out the window.
Right.
How'd you get him to do that?
Well, it was luck, just like you said. As a matter of fact, I mean, I was went to the inauguration. I was actually in a law office on Pennsylvania Avenue, and it was actually a luncheon. And I was actually had the camera at my foot. And when I realized the motorcade was coming down, I'm like, okay, how many times am I going to get this? So I grabbed the camera, and I actually took this shot through a window glass. And so, you know, of course, I'm afraid I'm going to get glare and so forth, but I positioned myself well, and then I could tell you, I think I took five bursts, but I got the shot just as the motorcade got there, and the president's leaning a glass against the glass, and I call it the president is speaking. But when I shot it, you know, I kind of knew I had it. And so when I got back and enlarged it to a 5 or 7, you could see it. But when I took it out to a 16 by 20, it had all the great resolution. You can see the president in there, and it's one of my favorite shots, but it was pure luck that it came up.
Well, you say it's pure luck, but you had the sense to not get the deflection off the glass, and you had it cropped right, and you had the image right, the Fletcher Thompson, the D's. Obviously, it's an accumulation of years and years of wisdom. Not that many years, but
enough.
yeah, years of wisdom to have it. We've got a little bit of time left. You get to go to places we don't. I mean, you had a great conversation with Justice Thomas.
Right.
You had time to spend with him. When you're in the presence of a Supreme Court justice, which is a more common experience for you than most of us, you take pictures? Do you have any pictures of him? In the conversation, do you ask, do you mind pictures?
Yeah, I do, and I find, I guess, maybe my personality is somewhat disarming, but I really find people pretty comfortable, you know, knowing that I'm not going to take the photo to put it on Facebook or, you know, social media, whatever. So if it's, you know, I'm taking it for personal purposes like that, you know, credibility, that person who might not otherwise let you take photos will let you take it because, you know, there you're taking it for the pleasure of the moment, not for some commercial purpose and like that. But again, you know, I'll ask, but it's amazing to me that people will say, well, sure, you can take it.
So, yeah, I know.
You know, I do get the photo.
Well, that is, and you're right. You are, you're easy to speak with. You are interesting and interested. And I think that's what makes it work. When you get interested in somebody, they're quicker to allow you to take the picture and work. Well, we're out of time. We could do this for hours. I've done it for hours. I have to thank the Red River Radio. We got Wally. We got Renee in the back answering the calls. Thank the guests. Thank Kermit. And remember, get close, stay focused, and keep shooting.